From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour is made on a day just like this one. 90-plus degrees in summer, you're desperate for a cold drink. Maybe you stop at the nearest place, maybe you're on the road, and every cold beverage is staring at you encased in plastic. And then you remember, I promised to stop using single-use plastic for the month of July. Could you do it? Plastic has provided many societal improvements, but it's also become default packaging for companies who make single-use products. And an organization called Beyond Plastics is pushing a plastic-free July. They want us to think about the changes we could make ourselves. This coincides with an effort to pressure banks, for example, to cut investments into fossil fuel companies. A lot of things going on this month. Our guests are discussing grassroots efforts aimed at plastics and fossil fuels. And we're going to go in a lot of different directions in this conversation. Let me welcome in studio with us, Melissa Carlson is an environmental activist working on plastic reduction bills in New York State. Welcome back to the program. Thank you for being here.
Thanks, Evan.
Also with us in studio is Jim Bearden, a retired sociologist and a volunteer for Third Act Rochester. First of all, hello, Jim. Thank you for being
here.
Hello. Tell us what Third Act Rochester is.
Well, Third Act Rochester is a community of Americans over 60 determined to change the world for the better. Third Act harnesses an unparalleled generational power to safeguard our climate democracy. I'm reading from the statement on the webpage. It started about two and a half years ago. Bill McKibben, you know Bill McKibben, he 350.org, and he spun this off as to be a support for the younger climate activists. You know, there are a lot of younger people doing climate activism, but this older people can help out, and that's the basic idea. And we have several kinds of things that we want to do. You mentioned we want to end the money pipeline for fossil development. I should say, we're not telling the banks don't ever do business with the oil companies. We're saying stop drilling, stop mining. Any fossil that's in the ground now should stay there. If we're going to be able to stop climate change, you know, it's already gone a long way, but we can do that. And we're going to Chase. It's one of the four biggest banks in the U.S., and all of them have promised at the Paris Accords to reach what was called, 1.5 degrees centigrade, you know.
In warming, yeah.
By 2050. Mm-hmm. And they've all backslid on that. They've been spending tons of money still developing fossil fuels, and they even sort of say it. I mean, Jamie Dimon has made a statement. We're relaxing. You know, we're not going to do this, that, and the other. We're going to work on the end. We haven't given up the goal, but we're not really doing anything. Their investments in fossil fuel production just continue.
So let me just jump in there,
sure,
because I'm going to bring in our other guest, but we're going to talk to Jim a little bit later this hour more about that letter that's being delivered later this week,
yeah.
I think. So we'll talk about that, and then we'll talk a little bit more before the hour's up about more about what Third Act Rochester's mission is, because I think, listeners, we may have a few who are in that age bracket that you're talking about who might be interested. Let me also welcome on the phone with us, Alexis Goldsmith is the organizing director for Beyond Plastics. Alexis, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me what Beyond Plastics is.
We are a national advocacy organization dedicated to ending plastic pollution. And our theory of change is that plastic pollution can only end when we pass laws to restrict the production and use of plastics. And our focus is on building the grassroots movement to do just that.
Well, we appreciate you being here. And let me welcome as well Dr. Samantha Romanek, who is a postdoctoral fellow in biomedical engineering at the University of Rochester. Sammy, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me again.
So, Alexis's time's a little short here, and so I just want to say at the outset here, Melissa Carlson reached out to me, and we've been emailing about some of what you are even doing to be as plastics-free as you can this month, and it starts with this bag. I know this is radio, but I want you to describe for listeners the non-plastic bag that you have. What is it?
It's a T-shirt that I cut off below the arms, and I sewed it up across the chest, and I took it out of the refrigerator to bring it here. Actually, it had my lettuce in it. So that's my my non-plastic produce bag. And
how's it working?
Good. Things are staying fresh. We've all heard of the three R's, reduce, reuse, recycle. There's actually six, rethink and refuse and repair. And one of the reuse things, I think, well, I use my plastic bags over and over again. Well, I've used my T-shirt for a long time, and now I'm reusing it in a different way.
Are there other areas that you are trying to be plastics-free this month?
You can see my water bottle. It's metal.
Metal, yeah.
I've already do a pretty good thing, canvas bags for going shopping. And I'm aware of all the plastics.
I mean, like, especially now, are you looking around going, oh my gosh, plastic here, plastic there? I mean, is it like popping at you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's everywhere. It's everywhere.
Yeah. I go to the store to buy a doorknob at the hardware store, and it's encased in plastic. I don't want the plastic.
Probably even more plastic than it, like an amazing amount of like plastic, like weapons grade plastic. It's incredible how much plastic. I am amazed at the packaging industry. They are brilliant. They're very very clever at getting business. Everything has to be super, super packaged. So that's an idea, you know, that's a few of the ideas that Melissa Carlson has. But Alexis Goldsmith, what do you want people thinking about, whether it's July or beyond July, as the organizing director of Beyond Plastics, for how we sort of encounter plastics in our lives and realistically what we do about that?
Great question, and this is a huge topic. So I think Plastic Free July as an international movement is a really effective way for people to start to just observe how much plastic they're encountering in their daily lives and what choices they're able to make to reduce the plastic that they're consuming through their groceries and other products. But as you know, you're already hinting at, it's difficult to impossible to avoid plastic. And that's not the fault of the consumer. That is the fault of the producers and honestly the fossil fuel industry, because plastics are made from fossil fuels and they are a huge share of the market. And the petrochemical industry has a vested interest in producing as much plastic as possible. Much of it is being used for single-use packaging. And one other thing I'll mention to answer your question, Plastic Free July is also a great way for people to think about the health impacts of plastic. There is an enormous amount of research coming out in recent years that we are consuming large amounts of microplastics. Just this year, researchers at Columbia found that a liter of bottled water contains up to 400,000 nanoplastic particles. So that's very concerning. So reducing plastic use is not just good for the planet, but it's also good for your health.
Dr. Romanek, do you want to elaborate on that last point?
Yeah, sure. There are, you know, microplastics that shed from almost any plastic material. So when you think about not just bottled water, but any packaged food in plastic, the same thing can happen. You could get shedding of microplastics or nanoplastics from any plastic type, any food type, and especially when you either heat up the plastic or cool it down, like putting it into the refrigerator. Also, depending on what is packaged inside the plastic. So in that study, it was just water. So that's a neutral pH. But if you're talking about something that's more acidic, like a juice, it could possibly leach more plastics, microplastics or nanoplastics. So it's really all dependent, but I think that study was great to kind of open our eyes and show the public to be more aware of what this plastic, although it is very important as far as keeping our food safe from pathogens, what these microplastics that are shedding into our food and drink are doing to our bodies is still unknown. And that's something I think is cause for concern.
So before we let Alexis Goldsmith go, her time is short as the organizing director of Beyond Plastics. Can I just ask you, Alexis, how much change you have seen and how much resistance to change you see? I mean, companies that, you know, send us stuff in the mail, the packaging that we talked about, the packaging at the store, the elaborate packaging that comes with just about everything that we are purchasing now, and a lot of single-use plastics. I don't see it lessening, but maybe I'm not seeing the full picture. What are you seeing, and how much resistance is there to change to go away from plastics?
Great question, and I can stay a bit longer if you'd like to have me.
Okay, yeah, great.
So I would love to talk about a statewide bill to reduce plastic packaging. It's called the Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act. It's sponsored by Senator Pete Harcum and Assemblymember Deborah Glick. This is the kind of bill that we need to actually reduce the enormous amounts of plastic packaging and make more plastic-free options available to all consumers in New York State. But it has enormous resistance, not from consumers, because a statewide poll found that a plurality of consumers, 62%, support this bill, but from fossil fuel industries and fast-moving consumer brands, Kraft and Coca-Cola. They are the ones that are resistant to changing their packaging. So they actually spend a lot of money in lobbying to kill bills like these that would get to the root of the problem, which is over-reliance on unnecessary single-use packaging. We found that most people want plastic-free options, want to reduce plastic in their lives. So I don't really think that behavior change is actually the issue. And in fact, the industry has done a really good job of marketing it as a consumer problem. You know, we don't recycle well enough. We don't manage our waste well enough, when in fact, plastics cannot be managed just because of the material that they are, that they never biodegrade and they're not truly recyclable.
Well, that's an interesting last point there. More and more, we are starting to see the claim that plastics are more environmentally friendly or even biodegradable plastics. Melissa Carlson, you've seen this in various places, yes?
Mm-hmm, yes.
And what do you make of it as just, you know, as a non-expert consumer who is an activist when you see biodegradable plastic?
I thought it was a good thing. I bought some for the Rock City compost liners. And then I said, well, heck, these are plastic bags. Let me use them for vegetables. And they started to disintegrate when I got them wet. And then I started reading more about it. And I've been working a lot with Alexis and the bills. And I know that a plastic made from corn or sugar still has the same fillers in it as any plastic bag does. And so it's just degrading. And compostable or biodegradable might mean it breaks apart in the environment, and it might mean it takes 100 years or hundreds of years to break apart. So, so much greenwashing, and there's no standards.
Well, and Alexis, I'm reading a story out of Berkeley News. New process makes biodegradable plastics truly compostable. Tingzhu's lab has embedded polymer-eating enzymes in plastic to allow programmed degradation after the plastic's useful life is over, claims the article. Should we trust that? How do we feel about biodegradable plastic, Alexis?
Interesting timing. We actually just came out with a report called Demystifying Bioplastics. It's available on our website at beyondplastics.org. But these claims about enzymes being able to break down plastics, mycelium being able to break down plastics, they might offer some hope, but it's all about what really happens in practice and in the actual environment. And the truth is that there is just the sheer volume of plastic that has made its way into the environment over the last 75 years cannot be broken down by enzymes. These studies are done in controlled lab environments. They're not being done in the ocean and, you know, just like on the roadside where you see plastic being littered. And maybe Samantha could speak more to this.
Yeah, Samantha, you want to hit that?
Yeah, sure. So there is this, the first identified, I believe, enzyme was the enzyme to break down PET. And this enzyme was actually found in a bacteria that was found in Japan near a PET recycling facility. And so this bacterium was found in the environment to break down PET, but they were able to identify and isolate out the enzyme responsible for it. But this enzyme does take some time to break down the PET. And so what scientists are doing now are trying to use protein engineering to engineer this enzyme to make it more efficient at breaking down PET, as well as maybe thermal stable. So if you need to add in some kind of heat to help move along the process and things like that. And so researchers are, yes, in the laboratory trying to make these enzymes more efficient, but these enzymes do give us hope because they are, their only function is to break down this material. And so I do have a little bit of hope with those enzymes, but I am still skeptical because we are still in this phase of trying to learn about these enzymes, how they work, what are the best conditions to work in. And so I feel that we are still in the same phase of trying to come up with these, you know, quote unquote, compostable or biodegradable plastics. And so I do agree with all the speakers on this panel right now that most of these plastics do just kind of break down into maybe microplastics, and they kind of just hide in the compost rather than fully decomposing. So I don't normally trust those plastics. And so my go-to, and especially during the month of July, is to just avoid all plastics possible, whether if they claim to be biodegradable or compostable. Just avoiding all types of plastic, and especially during this month, would probably be your best goal.
Dr. Romanek, I want to give you some space, too, if you want to describe some of your favorite hacks for getting around typical plastic use. Is there anything that stands out?
Yeah, I mean, I've been practicing plastic-free for like 10 years now. So, you know, I live plastic-free July every month. But what I normally tell people when they want to basically get started is the hardest part is getting started. And I think that what I tell people is just to make realistic goals for yourself. So, for example, on July 1st, make a monthly goal for yourself. Maybe that goal would be like carrying a reusable water bottle with you everywhere you go. And, you know, as they say, after practicing something for at least 21 days, you create a habit. So then after that 1 month of practicing that, bringing that reusable bottle with you, then the next month, so say August 1st, you make another realistic goal for yourself. So, for example, carrying your reusable grocery bags in your car with you so you have them to shop every time you go out. And then, again, once you accomplish that goal that month, then the third month, make a new goal. And, you know, it's small, realistic steps. And on all of these habits that you will accumulate over time will then become your lifestyle. And so that's the advice I normally give people.
Well, and to your point about getting used to change, Dr. Romanek, I want to read an email from a listener that just came in. Kat says, "Hi, Evan. My family and I just had a trip down to Florida, and I was shocked at the amount of plastic bags given out at stores. To be honest, I kind of forgot about plastic bags entirely because of the ban on plastic bags in New York State. A small grocery run for our Airbnb should have taken a couple of paper bags. I ended up with 8 plastic bags, and some of them with only one item in them. And that one item wasn't something sensitive like raw meat, but a random item seemingly thoughtlessly diverted from the rest. I was definitely taken aback." That's from Kat. So, Sammy, I'm thinking about the point you just made about how long it takes people to get used to change that feels sort of like a big change at first. And I could tell you that when that ban was being debated, I mean, I don't even remember, maybe Megan Mack does, sometime in the last decade, because it was when I was hosting the show, I think it was the better part of a decade ago now, I bet you it's 5 to 7 years ago. Who knows what time is? But 2020, okay, there you go, 4 years ago. So people would call and just talk about how angry they were with this. And you know, they wanted the bags for their cat litter, which I get. I mean, like, I love cats. If you love cats and you're defending bags on those grounds, I love cats too. Don't come at me with the cat hate. I love cats. But people were really fired up. And now it's like 4 years later, and here's Kat emailing saying, "Wow, I had to go out of state to even think about plastic bags, and it felt weird and kind of wrong." And it sounds similar to the point you're making there, Sammy, that people will get used to change, even if it feels like a big change at first.
Yes, I think so. And change is possible, which is why I advise to make these small, realistic goals, because you want to make sure that you accomplish these changes. And so it will take time. And to Alex's point is that if we force the industry to make the change for us, maybe it might be easier. But I think it takes both ends. Industry will be more upstream, and I think the consumers are more downstream. But I think it takes both parties. And either way, this change will take some time.
Alexis Goldsmith's the organizing director for Beyond Plastics. What do you make of Kat's email, Alexis, going out of state and then encountering plastic bags and feeling taken aback by them?
I think this is an example of policies that are playing out across the state, both for and against single-use plastics. So Florida actually has a preemptive ban on banning plastic bags at the local level. And there are more than a dozen states that have this. So in Florida, cities and towns cannot ban plastic bags. And that's the opposite of what we have in New York, where now we have a statewide ban on plastic bags. And I think that this is industry interest playing out. They see the writing on the wall that plastics are a huge problem, but they don't want to reduce the production of plastic because, again, it's making them enormous profits. So unfortunately, in Florida, you have the overuse of plastic bags. But to Samantha's point, consumers in Florida can still refuse to use plastic bags and change their own habits by bringing reusable bags, and that's really important.
I like this idea of a ban on a ban. That's amazing to me. Go ahead, Sammy.
I'd like to just add to that point as well. And even though that there are bans on bans in these certain states, I think that even the organization or the business themselves can make that change. So it doesn't have to be industry or the consumer. The business owners themselves can actually decide whether they want to provide plastic bags or not. So they can also be a part of the solution with or without regulations.
I mean, Jim Beard, when's the last time you thought about plastic bags in a store? I mean, it's been years for me.
Every time I go to the grocery store, I mean, even though we don't have the bags, my wife went to Wegmans the other day, and where there used to be open produce, now everything is sealed up in little packages. So to get a package of mushrooms, you got to come in plastic.
So to that point, I just got an email about that maybe our guest can help with. Barbara says, my question is, what can I do about the produce that comes in single-use plastics, for example, strawberries or blueberries? Let me start with Melissa Carlson on that one. What would you say to Barbara?
I look for other places, and I annoy the producer. I went to Chautauqua over the weekend and was served at a fast food restaurant that only had plastic. And I know that putting hot food in plastic is going to leach the chemicals out, so I'm eating chemicals with my whatevers. And I wrote them and I called them and I said, stop this. So I would look for a different place or different product to buy, and then I would call Wegmans and say, stop this. That's part of my habit, is I'm an annoying consumer. I don't just politely take it and walk away. I find out who to call, and I push back. Same with policymakers. That's why I've been...
Do people see you come, and they're like, oh, God.
Some do.
It's Melissa Carlson. No, I mean, I take your point. The voice of the consumer, if it is consistent enough, you expect institutions, businesses, companies to respond to it.
Yeah. And I know that politicians say for every time I make a phone call, I'm representing, I don't know, 50 people that aren't making a phone call. So I'm the voice of all those people.
I'll ask Alexis and Sammy. Alexis, Barb wants to know, you know, she loves strawberries, blueberries, raspberries at the grocery store, but a lot of single-use plastics there. Not only that, but as we've been finding out in recent months here in Monroe County at least, not recyclable locally, which is really a shock to some people who've been used to putting those in at least in the blue bin. So what do you say to that, Alexis?
I would say that those plastic containers can be replaced with paperboard berry containers that are fully recyclable. Another option is to try to buy from local farms. They usually come in paper pint containers or go to U-Pix. But I have to acknowledge that sometimes buying things in plastic may be your only option. And in that case, again, you just have to make the best choices that you can and do what you can.
Sammy, you want to weigh in on that too?
Yeah, I agree with Alexis as well. At least in Rochester, we have a very large public market that I like to go to every Saturday morning and buy my fresh produce. And you could get berries there. You could bring your own produce bags to put them in. And then also, we have so many farms here in New York that some of them let you come and pick your own berries. So you can do that as a fun family event as well. But I do also agree with Alexis' point that not everyone has these options available to them. And so, yes, you do have to make the best choice with what you have offered to you. So unfortunately, that is only plastic packaged foods sometimes.
Mm. Yeah, Barb, I appreciate the email. And listeners, if you've got your own ideas, if you want to weigh in on you know, how you're getting by with fewer plastics, that's great. Cindy writes in from Spencerport to say, hi, Evan and Megan. I've been getting veggies from Off the Muck Market, which delivers from the Syracuse area. Some things are in plastic, but many are loose in the box, like carrots and potatoes. Smaller things are sometimes in paper bags. I order accordingly, skipping berries due to the use of plastic clamshells. That is from Cindy in Spencerport. So active choices based on produce. But listeners, if you get ideas, let us know on this. It's 844-295-TALK. It's 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections@WXXI.org. We're going in a lot of different directions this hour. We are talking about plastics. We're taking some of your feedback on that. An organization called Beyond Plastics is asking us to think about having a plastic-free July, especially single-use plastics that are everywhere. And we're talking about how some of our guests are doing just that, taking your feedback on that. We're talking about what we know about the state of research into plastics. And we're going to be talking about other efforts in regards to climate change and related issues with Jim Bearden, who's a retired sociologist and a volunteer for Third Act Rochester. Melissa Carlson's an environmental activist working on plastics reduction bills in New York State. Alexis Goldsmith on the line with us from Beyond Plastics. And Dr. Samantha Romanek is with us, a postdoc fellow in biomedical engineering at the University of Rochester. We'll take this only break of the hour and come right back. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on The Next Connections, our guest is Rochesterian Richard Kaplan. He says there is a great American middle, millions of people who care about democracy and want to save it. He's the co-author of a book called Caring for Democracy, The American Fix, and he'll explain what this system of fixing democracy might look like Wednesday on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Yeah, we're talking plastics this hour, and during our brief break here, Melissa Carlson was just mentioning a piece that you were reading about. Well, I'll let you, the floor is yours. What caught your eye?
In Time magazine, there is an article about Fiji and all the plastics there. Many of you are aware of the square water bottle that says Fiji water that's bottled there. And Fiji gets plastic from Peru and South Africa and other Asian countries that all come to its shores. There is one landfill for all of the islands of Fiji that is not accessible for most of them. So they burn plastic, which creates huge fumes of all sorts of health-related issues, and they just let it flow off down the river back in the ocean. Any water bottles or any plastic they have, they throw in the ocean, and then it washes back up on their shores, and there is nothing they can do with it. I'm not sure why Fiji water is supposed to be clean on all this. At the end of the article, there was one Middle East quote guy that said, we know gasoline use is going down, but we've got oil that's a finite resource, and we're going to keep on using it. So in other words, we're going to make as much plastic as we can. And they're the other side from all of us consumers. 16,000 chemicals are in plastic, varying degrees, and 25% of them are chemicals of concern for our health. And so it's on us that we're destroying ourselves. I'm worried for my daughter who wants to have kids. Well, what sort of baby is she's going to have that's born full of plastic?
And that is a point that Dallas made in an email, saying that some of the issue seems to be how fast a newborn ends up with plastics in their body. And again, I don't I don't want to scare people unnecessarily. That's why we're trying to be as sober as we can about the data, what we do and don't know. Dr. Romanek, what do we know about the way plastics might impact our bodies, and maybe what questions do we still need to understand better with research?
Yeah, so right now what we do know is that they are present in our bodies. And I like to call this we're still in the identifying phase. We're still only just identifying what is in us and where, but we don't know specific details such as where exactly in the body are, so there was a study that showed that microplastics have been found in all of the placentas that were tested. But we don't know where exactly in the placenta. Are they inside cells? Are they outside of the cells? What exactly are they doing? And that's because we have to digest or dissolve the entire tissue and then filter out the plastics in order to identify them. We don't really have too much of a way to see where they are inside of us. And so because of that, we are limited on some information. Other information we are limited on are, how did we get exposed to these particles? What was on the particles and what is inside of the particles once we are exposed to them? And so when I say inside the particles, those are like the chemicals that most people are talking about. But pretty much everywhere we have looked, we have found plastics, whether that is in the environment or in our bodies. And so we don't have too much information right now as to how much harm they are for us. In my opinion, I would be more concerned about the chemicals and what is on the plastics rather than the plastics themselves, because plastics are supposed to be an inert material. So maybe the plastic particles themselves might not be too damaging compared to the chemicals, but it really also depends on the size of the plastic, where the plastic is traveling inside the body, because maybe these particles accumulate in one place and then they start to grow. And yeah, so it's all dependent on so many factors that we just don't have a lot of answers to, but I would be concerned on all of those aspects. And so, yes, just reducing our exposure as much as possible would be best for us. And just knowing that microplastics have been found in the human placenta in more than one study is alarming and concerning, and how those might affect the fetus is we definitely need more research on that to know what that means for our future.
All right, so listeners, if you send an email or you're on the phone, I'm going to try to get through everything, but it's going to be tough. A ton of feedback is coming in. But before I jump to your phone calls, one more question that I want to direct to Jim Bearden, because we've been talking about plastics. Plastics, of course, come from fossil fuels. And Jim is part of a group called Third Act Rochester that, in solidarity with groups in New York City, for example, the New York City public grassroots stuff this week is going to be a little more boisterous, I think. Here on Thursday, they're just delivering a letter, which is not just, I don't mean to diminish that, but it's a little bit different than what we'll see in New York City. Regardless, why don't you tell people again what's happening on Thursday, what Third Act Rochester is doing?
Yes, we're gathering at noon at the Liberty Pole and walking down Main Street to the west until we get to the corner of Clinton and South Avenue, which is right in front of the Chase Tower. And we will be having speakers there and talking about these issues and things that people can do. Where we've been talking about how do you react to plastics, we're talking to people about what can you do that might have some effect on the financing of fossil fuels. So we're delivering a letter to Jamie Dimon, and six U.S. senators sent him a letter yesterday, I think, which was pointing out to him that they have failed on keeping their promise from 2016 to reduce their fossil fuel loans to fossil fuels. Since then, they've loaned out $430 billion to fund fossil fuel development. This is not just marketing fossil fuels. This is getting new ones out of the ground. So we can do that. Now, admittedly, you know, even the thousands of people in Third Act are not going to get Jamie Dimon to change his mind. But we get his attention and we get other people's attention. And so we have a second thing that we talk to people about, and that is align your money with your values. You don't have to fund these banks if they're funding fossil fuels. So we've encouraged people to shift their credit cards, their bank accounts, their retirement funds, whatever, away from these fossil fuel funding companies and to put their money into local community banks,
like
credit
what?
Unions.
What's an example?
Well, in Rochester, there are dozens of credit unions. I belong to the Genesee Co-op on Gregory Street and have done that for years. They give loans to people for houses and cars, and, you know, all the money goes into and other community banks, smaller banks like Canandaigua National Bank, Five Star Bank. There are a bunch of relatively local banks that you can go to which are not in the business of funding oil development.
Or making loans that go to new development of fossil fuels.
They help build our community, because if they're making loans to small businesses and to people, then everything gets better around here. We have a housing problem. So these things are connected. Money needs to go to people and not to fund fossil fuels. And we have some training sessions that we connect to that help people do their switching, aligning their money with their values.
How do people get in touch with Third Act Rochester?
Well, the simplest way is to send an email to 3RDACTROC.
Third Act Rock.
Yep. At Proton, Proton, .me.
All right. We'll make sure that anybody who needs that address can get it.
Yep.
Third Act Rock at Proton, .me.
Yep.
And they'll tell you how to get involved if you're over the age of...
Well, we take anybody.
We don't check.
We
say 60.
You don't check. You say 60 plus. They're not going to ask for a birth certificate.
No.
They recommend 60 plus. That's Third Act Rochester. That's the story there. Let me get some feedback from listeners. Elizabeth in Fairport. Hello, Elizabeth. Go ahead.
Hi. This is one of the big issues that I've felt very strongly about for years. And I remember in early 90s when we had a reemergence of Earth Day, and all of a sudden companies decided they would be on the bandwagon, but it was all in just what they wrote on the outside of their packages, really. And I thought we would have, there was like this tiny reduction in plastics, and then it was like an explosion in the last 30 years. And one of the things I really believe needs to happen is that, you know, just like when you go to your town planning board and you have to do certain things in order to build something, I think these companies need to take the responsibility from using the plastics for what they produce for us, instead of shoving it on the end of the consumer and saying, oh, it's going to be more if we have to do something else, then, you know, putting it on there. You know, I think people will want to help a little bit, because what we're left with in the end is a disaster. I mean, nobody knows how to recycle as well as somebody, even people who are very well-meaning and learn about these things. It's very difficult for them, for all of us, to figure out what can be recycled and what can't be recycled. It's just mind-blowing. And I think the last program you had about the clamshells, I mean, I could have sworn we could do that. And we've been doing it. I clean everything out. I make sure... I'm just exasperated and frustrated, and, you know, I think that somehow things have to go back to these companies. If you can't figure out the end use or the end recycling, then you cannot produce it. I don't see how we can't go there right now, regardless of pushback. It just has to be done, and it may have to be done locally. It worked for plastic bags.
Well, Elizabeth, I appreciate that. And here's what I'm going to do. First, before I send it over to Alexis, and then I know Melissa's going to want to tell you about some of the work that she and groups have done on plastic reduction bills at the New York State level. It'd be a good time to update people on that. I'll also say that Stephen wrote in to say that He wanted to share reporting in a documentary about plastics recycling. He said it provides insight into the plastic industry's efforts to promote recycling and mislead the public about the viability of plastic recycling. And he thinks it didn't get the attention it deserved because it was released during the height of the COVID pandemic in March of 2020. It's Frontline, PBS, of course, some of the best journalism out there. Plastic Wars is what it's called. So Plastic Wars on PBS Frontline. You likely can stream it. Passport it, find it. But let me send the comment from Elizabeth over to Alexis Goldsmith, Organizing Director for Beyond Plastics, to respond. Go ahead, Alexis.
Thanks, Elizabeth. That's a great comment. And I completely agree with you that there needs to be some responsibility on the part of the producers who are making these materials in the first place that can't be managed, can't be effectively recycled, that are winding up in large amounts in the ocean and the environment and in our human bodies. So I'd bring it back to the state bill, the Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act. This is a bill that would implement something called extended producer responsibility for packaging. And the idea is to make the companies responsible for putting all this packaging on the market for the end of life of that packaging. So the bill would impose a fee on packaging that would reimburse municipalities for what we, the taxpayers, are paying to recycle, landfill, and incinerate packaging waste. And the fee would be eco-modulated, which means that they would pay more if the packaging is worse for the environment or it can only be managed through landfilling and incineration. And they would pay less if it's easily recyclable, and they would pay nothing if the packaging is actually truly reusable within a reuse and refill system. The bill also does a lot of things, like it requires an actual reduction in plastic packaging. It requires 30% reduction in single-use plastic packaging over 12 years. It requires companies to meet recyclability criteria, so all packaging would have to reach a 70% recycling rate, so they would have to be effectively recyclable. It would get 17 toxic chemicals out of packaging, including phthalates and bisphenols, toluene, formaldehyde, heavy metals, benzene, and PFAS. And it would prevent waste incineration from counting towards recycling. So again, that's the Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act. Melissa has done a lot of organizing in Rochester on this bill, so I'd pass it over to her to add any comments about it.
Melissa?
I got the county and the city to send resolutions, and that was relatively easy to just call the city and say, hey, pass this resolution. Everybody agreed. Yeah, we agree with this. Dear state officials, do this. And I've learned how to do a lot of lobbying. I've gone to Albany, and I've met locally with my senators and assemblymen and others, and just say, hey, I'm a consumer. Again, I'm the one on the phone. I represent 100 people who aren't on the phone. And so it's really powerful to be able to call up a legislator and say, do this. It's not my responsibility. Why are you telling me to recycle when it's the responsibility of the packaging industry? And we got really close to getting it through, and then we know we got the attention of all the industry because they were pushing back so hard. Ah, they noticed we're a threat. Yay, we're getting places.
But this was a year that we've heard a lot of, a lot of Democrats were quite critical of Governor Hochul for kind of throwing a wrench into the end of the session with congestion pricing. And all of a sudden, that's a very esoteric New York City-based issue. But what it really did was it derailed a lot of the work on other bills and issues that were going on because they had to focus on this all of a sudden. Happened here, yes?
Yeah. Yeah.
Disappointed?
Yes.
Go ahead, Alexis. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll just say the bill passed the Senate with a healthy margin. So that was a huge success. And it was poised to pass in the Assembly as well. We had the votes to pass it, and then we just ran out of time because they have certain debate times, and it's a multi-hour debate for these bills. So it's concerning that, you know, we're waiting till the last minute to do important climate bills on these huge issues. But the fact that it passed the Senate is a huge win. So I think what listeners can do is call their assembly members. It's all eyes on the assembly. Call your assembly member and ask them to support the Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act, and let's get it done.
Okay. Let's see here. Let me just keep going right down the list here. There's a lot of comments here. Kathy in Chilai says, Wegmans has a suggestion box in each store. I sometimes take the time to fill out the form at the box and suggest they change the packaging on all produce like tomatoes, berries, etc., to the type of boxes they use in the summer from local farms. The same thing with the nuts and dried fruit that was all bulk until COVID. That's Kathy in Chilai. Just an idea there from her. And Sue in Farmington called in. She said she wants a suggestion for a container she can take to restaurants to take home leftover food.
I take anything. Old yogurt containers or just anything. They don't mind. It's mine.
Have you done it before?
Lots.
Melissa Carlson, you've done that. You've gone to restaurants and you said, don't worry about the takeout container. I've got it. Here
yep.
it is.
Yep.
And they say, oh, great.
Yeah, they do.
Is that right?
Yeah, I used to hide it, and now I just bring
well.
It up.
Sammy, yep.
Yeah, I know. My leftover containers are glass because I prefer glass at home over plastic. But yeah, I will bring my glass container and I will put whatever food I have left over on my plate into my container to go. And no one ever says anything. Sometimes they're like, wow, that's a good idea. I'm glad that you did that. And so some people actually notice.
Joe writes in to say, well, hey, garbage bags are made out of plastic. And then he has a shrug emoji. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to have plastic somewhere. All right, let's take Joe's point. Well, first of all, you're shaking your head there, Melissa Carlson.
I put my garbage in my interior waste basket, and then I carry it out and turn it upside down in the tote. What's the point of a garbage bag? That's total single-use plastic, and you're buying garbage. Why are you buying garbage?
Okay. So,
I'd like to add to that as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, Sammy.
So I have a dog, and so I actually reuse the empty dog food bag as my trash bag. So I'm kind of repurposing, but also not buying plastic bags specifically for my trash. So I source my own trash bags.
Okay, there you go. But Dallas says, well, but what would eyeglass lenses and contact lenses be made out of? I mean, I'm sure we could probably figure out products that need some plastic. I mean, Alexis Goldsmith, is it zero plastic? Is that the future? Is a realistic rebalancing? I mean, how do you see it?
I see it as first we need to reduce plastic production overall. I don't have a good answer to that, but all I can say is that there is way too much single-use plastic, and that's really what is causing the plastic pollution in the environment.
Yeah. Dallas, I mean, I take your point. I said at the outset of this program, plastics have done some good for the world. There's a lot of single-use plastics doing not very good for the world, and we are just so used to it now. Like, we just accept it everywhere. When a change, as Dr. Samantha Romanek has been telling us, is actually pretty within reach for a lot of this stuff. Now, contact lenses, I don't have an answer for that one. And I'm sure that there are more that we could probably figure out. It's a question of what is realistic from the grassroots level and then what's realistic from the policy top-down level. And our guests have been saying that sometimes policy and change at the top happens when there is critical mass, people making changes, et cetera. Are you confident that can happen? Or as you get a little bit older, do you get more cynical about all this, or do you become more optimistic?
Well, you know, I have, as has been said, I have a pessimism of the mind, but an optimism of the will. And so we go ahead and we do what we can. And we can only do that, you know. One of the things that we're pushing is to say that we elders are doing this for the children of the world. I'm not going to live a long time. A lot of the really bad things that are coming, I'm not going to see. But there are people being born every day who will. And it's our responsibility to do whatever we can, as best we can.
Well, that's a good way to kind of put a cap on that. Jim is a retired sociologist and volunteer for Third Act Rochester. Melissa Carlson, final thoughts you want to leave with some listeners?
Do things. Do whatever you can. And start small. Make it a habit.
Start small and make it a habit. No more plastic. She's wrapping her produce in an old shirt.
Mm-hmm. It works.
It works. Alexis Goldsmith, Organizing Director for Beyond Plastics. What do you want to leave with listeners?
I would agree with my fellow panelists, the start small, make it habit, and do what you can. I would leave with a quick story. Back when there was lead in gasoline, lead was being found everywhere in the environment, much like microplastics are being found everywhere now. But when we finally got lead out of gasoline, the lead levels in the environment started to decline. And so I have hope that if we can reduce plastic production and use, we will see a decline in microplastics in the environment and in our bodies as well. So have hope and do what you can.
And Dr. Samantha Romanek, about 30 seconds. What do you want to leave with listeners?
Yes, again, with everything everyone just said, just getting started. But I also want to mention that, you know, with the contact lenses, I don't wear them myself personally, but I do know that there are options for dailies or monthlies. So even making that switch to monthlies will be a reduction. And so just doing whatever you can. And as consumers, by reducing the demand for plastics, I think that will also help the industry change and accommodate for what the demand is, because that's what their argument is, right? Is that the people want this plastic and that's why we're giving it to them. So maybe if we just raise that demand for no more plastics, that might help too.
Sammy is a postdoctoral fellow in biomedical engineering at the University of Rochester. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Alexis Goldsmith, where do people find more about Beyond Plastics?
At our website, beyondplastics.org.
Thanks for making time for us this hour.
Thank you.
Jim Bearden, retired sociologist and volunteer for Third Act Rochester. Thank you for being with us, Jim.
Thank you.
And our thanks to Melissa Carlson, who... she might yell at you if you're not yell at you. She's actually very nice. But she might raise objections if you own a store that's using plastics. She's going to do it in a nice way. She's an environmental activist working on plastic reduction in New York State. I'm glad I've got our mugs, no plastic bottles, in studio this hour.
Very good.
Thank you for being here. And from all of us at Connections, thanks for listening. We're back with you tomorrow on Member Supported Public Radio.